Welcome back to another episode of Row 3 Super Amazing Bananas Fun History Podcast. I'm here with Vishnu Nair, Dan Balran, and Andrew Goblet. Last week, we debated the origin and ethics of Kraft mac and cheese. Today, we're discussing everyone's favorite topics, Ronald Reagan, the 1980 Olympics, the war on drugs, and Chernobyl.
The 80s were a weird time for everyone, I think.
Absolutely. You have a former Hollywood actor in the White House who is trying to conduct a literal death ray in space to keep away Soviet missiles, the first Olympics in Eastern Europe, a royal wedding that garnered over 1 billion viewers, and the Super Bowl Shuffle.
As much as I want to talk about the 86 Bears, let's go back to the fact that in 1981, Ronald Reagan was elected to the presidency. He started off as an actor, not the usual stepping stone to the Oval Office.
Reagan was elected as governor of California in 1967 and held that office until 1975. So the country was familiar with Reagan as a politician as well as an actor. Those who remember the election of 1981 remember his Hollywood career being brought up often. My mom says she remembers some claiming that his history as an actor was a little weird. It upset some people, but he'd had a pretty solid run as a governor, so the press didn't have much on him.
Now, we could sit here and talk and discuss about Reaganomics and stagflation, but I really don't think anyone wants to listen to that. Instead, I want to talk about the Olympics.
From the Miracle on Ice to the doping scandal, Russia and the U.S. have had a pretty tense Olympic history. The 1980 Summer Olympics was the exception, because the U.S. didn't even go. According to a report from the U.S. State Department, quote, in 1980, the United States led a boycott of the Summer Olympic Games in Moscow to protest the late 1979 Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, end quote. In total, 65 nations refused to participate in the Games, whereas 80 countries sent athletes to compete. This was the smallest Olympic Games since the 1956 Summer Olympics in Melbourne. Even the great Muhammad Ali traveled to Tanzania, Nigeria, and Senegal to convince their leaders to join the boycott. He was successful in convincing Kenya's government.
Another major player of the 80s was the wife of Ronald Reagan, Nancy. The term war on drugs was coined in 1971 during the Nixon administration, but the Reagans really took it to heart and the movement really took off.
Nancy Reagan began the Just Say No campaign.
If you can even call it a campaign.
Right. Apart from inviting the first ladies of 30 various nations to the White House in Washington, D.C., for a conference called the First Ladies Conference on Drug Abuse, and appearing on the Good Morning America to promote the cause, all that Nancy really did was talk about drug abuse and not do much to help.
While Nancy was off urging sixth graders not to smoke crack, the real war on drugs crackdown continued. In an article from 1989, Los Angeles Police Chief Daryl Gates literally said that those who, quote, blast some pot on a regular basis should be taken out and shot, end quote.
He also happened to found the DARE drug education program, which was quickly adopted nationwide, despite the fact that it was proven ineffective.
All that really was accomplished by the new and improved war on drugs and Just Say No was a major uptick in those imprisoned for drug-related crimes. According to a report from the U.S. Department of Justice from the years 1980 and 2009, the adult arrest rate for drug possession grew 138%, and the number of people behind bars for nonviolent drug law offenses increased from 50,000 in 1980 to over 400,000 in 1997.
Speaking of disasters, in 1986, a nuclear power plant would give the Just Say No campaign a run for its money in terms of epic failures.
Did somebody say nuclear?
That's right. 1986 would be the year when the infamous Chernobyl accident would occur in Soviet Ukraine, with the melting of the number 4 nuclear reactor within the project. This accident would kill 300 people, ranging from immediate vaporization and injuries to diseases caused by radiation in the months to follow.
The Chernobyl incident would lead to major social reform within the entire nation, dictating safety regulations in Soviet nuclear power plants.
President Gorbachev said on video that the Chernobyl incident was even more influential than his own government program of Perestroika. Talk about an honest guy.
Uncle Mikhail, Pravda, the official newspaper of the Soviet Union, did not report the accident until 2 weeks after it occurred, and Gorbachev himself did not publicly acknowledge the disaster until 3 weeks later after the initial incident. Gorbachev claimed to be enforcing perestroika, or reform in the Soviet Union, and a policy known as glasnost, which means openness and refers to a transparent and honest government.
If covering up the world's worst nuclear accident is considered transparent and honest, then Gorbachev was doing a wonderful job.
The official U.S. reaction to the Chernobyl disaster demonstrates how Soviet and American tensions were becoming a bit less taut and how the strict Soviet Union was beginning to deteriorate. The statement made on April 30th, 1986 by Reagan's press secretary, Larry Speaks, illustrates the official U.S. reaction to the disaster. Quote, "The United States is prepared to make available to the Soviet Union humanitarian and technical assistance in dealing with this accident," end quote. He goes on to explain how the USSR was asking many other Western countries for help. The Soviet economy couldn't handle a disaster this large. Our Soviet friends wouldn't survive for much longer, and the Berlin Wall fell in 1989, and in 1991, the USSR would dissolve.
Speaking of large, we would see the enormous uprising of a man within the ranks of Iraqi politics. This man is, of course, Saddam Hussein. So stinky, he definitely needed a bath. Get it? Because that's his political party.
I see what you did there.
Anyway, Saddam was most definitely a radical from his party. Having been with the Ba'ath Party, he and his fellow members attempted to assassinate Iraqi's president, Abd al-Karim Qasim. This attempt was unsuccessful, but it did leave Saddam wounded, which would lead him to have to escape to Syria. There, he attended law school, and above all else, he waited.
Saddam Hussein returned after the Ramadan Revolution of 1963, but was immediately arrested for fighting within his political party. Saddam then escaped prison, and in 1979, he became the president of Iraq.
He achieved this through coups, political affiliations, and ruthless acts of assassination, rape, and genocide. Saddam, however, was not done yet. With his rise to power, his first order of action would be to invade Iran for oil. The avenue of oil was not new for him, since he nationalized Iraq's oil industry in 1973, which helped the country immensely.
Saddam would also gain access to powerful chemical weapons. This was noted as important within the international community. But no one would come to stop his genocide of the Kurdish people, however.
Saddam then looked toward his next neighbor of Kuwait. He invaded it in 1990, and this would lead to the UN and the United States signing a ceasefire in order to prevent the use of chemical weapons.
The Gulf War, uprising of Islamic sects, and the missile attack against Baghdad then sparked what would soon be the downfall of Saddam Hussein. Eventually, Saddam was found guilty of his crimes and was hanged on December 30th, 2006 for his crimes against humanity.
Didn't he want to be killed by a firing squad?
Yes, but the Iraqis denied him his request.
You know what? Good for them.
In our final segment, we'll be taking calls from some of our avid listeners. The caller ID says Adam Usen. Adam, welcome to the show.
Okay, now that was epic.
Obviously, the 80s were a very transformative period for the United States. Having someone like Reagan in the White House and all that shit going down in Iran and Iraq tends to do that to a country. A lot of what we talked about today aren't exactly the most uplifting of events, but of course there's an upside. The 80s gave us Star Wars, Steven Spielberg films, Bruce Springsteen, and even more. Key events in the 80s, such as the Berlin Wall coming down or success at strategic arms limitation treaty talks in Iceland with Gorbachev, led to the dissolution of the Soviet Union and left the United States as the lone superpower going into the 1990s.
Tune in next week to hear Andrew's 3-hour-long review of the upcoming indie film, Detective Pikachu.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.